come on a journey with a cinephile.
Wake up, sucker. We're thieves and we're bad guys. That's exactly what we are.
We was getting too big for our bitches.
Excellent day for an exorcism.
What have you done to its eyes?
I said, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains in.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Biddy well, little brother. Biddy well.
Hello and welcome, listeners, to episode 135 of Journey with a Cinephile, a horror movie podcast. As always, I'm your tour guide here of David Garrett Jr., recording out of Columbus, Ohio. And on this episode here for you, I have my Trek Through the Twos number 9, as I have featured reviews of The Haunted Gold from 1932, and then I got around to watching The Sadness, which I believe is a 2021 festival film and getting its wide release here. I watched that one on Shudder. And then also on this episode for you, I have mini reviews of Extraordinary, The Loved Ones, Santa Sangree, and then I also got to watch a screener of The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis. So, I don't really think there's a whole lot I need to get you up to speed with here. A little bit lighter of an episode just because I had a fairly busy week. But before I get over to anything else, let me do my
monthly review.
And for my monthly review here for May is going to shake out like this. I watched 42 movies total. 32 of them are horror movies. 5 of those are 2022 releases. And my percentage of horror for the month is 76.19%. So the horror movies that I watched during the month are The Mask of Fu Manchu, Black Roses, Hatching, The Serpent and the Rainbow, Blue Sunshine, Friday the 13th Part 2, Off Season, Chandu the Magician, The Burbs, Dead Calm, Beyond Dream's Door, Tetsuo the Iron Man, I Madman, Parents, The Voices, Friday the 13th A New Beginning, The Death Kiss, Strangeland, End of Days, Cloverfield, The Innocents, I Spit on Your Grave, Hellbound Hellraiser 2, Men, The Monster Walks, Phantasm 2, Inland Empire, The Butterfly Murders, Haunted Gold, The Sadness, Extraordinary, and The Loved Ones. So 16 countries are represented, and they are United States, Canada, Finland, Sweden, Australia, Japan, Germany, Norway, Denmark, France, United Kingdom, Poland, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Ireland, and Belgium. So for the 2022 releases that I watched are Hatching, Off Season, The Innocents, Men, and The Sadness. Those are the 5. Now my oldest watches are all from 1932, and they are The Mask of Fu Manchu, Chandu the Magician, The Death Kiss, Monster Walks, and Haunted Gold. The average year of everything is 1992. Now the highest rated I cannot reveal, as both are on this episode here, and well, at least one's on this episode, and the other one is a movie that could potentially be a summer series pick, and those are both 8.5s for me. The lowest rated that I have are The Mask of Fu Manchu, Chandu the Magician, The Monster Walks, and then a movie on this episode, as all of those are rated at 6s, which is actually means I have a pretty good year if that's my lowest rating. So my average rating, though, for the month is a 7.5. Now, the two movies that aren't on this feed are going to be Friday the 13th Part 2 was for Movie Club Challenge over on the podcast Under the Stairs. I also watched Cloverfield for Creature Comforts podcast, which I believe that can be found on the No More Room in Hell feed for that. So then before I get into where I'm at for the yearly totals, I just wanted really quickly to kind of show how this month shaped up against other months of May, as this is I'm tied as last year for having five new horror movies that I watched, as my highest was 2019 with eight, 2018 with seven. I had five, and then the lowest was 2020 with only four. And that is 20 horror movies that are released from that year in the month of May total. And then this is tied for my highest month for watching horror movies with 2019, as I had 32 in both of those years. In 2020, I had 30. 2021, I had 27. And my lowest was 2018 with 20. And that means I've watched 141 total horror movies in May since I've been keeping track. Now, for total movies I've watched, this is my highest month by far, as I watched 42. Then my next one was last year at 37. And then 2020 and 2019, I watched 36. My lowest was 2018 with 30. And I've watched 181 total movies in the month of May since I've kept track. Now, for average year, I have a 1992 for this year. And the overall average is 1996. So this year actually kind of was bringing that average down. And my highest year would be 2018 with a 2002 average rating. And then the year after that was 1998. I had 1996 in 2021, so last year, and then 1994 for 2020. And then my average rating, this is tied for my highest year with 2019 as a 7.5. Last year I was at a 7.3, which was tied with 2018 with a 7.3 as well. My lowest average rating for the month of May was 2020, as I had a 6.6. And then, as I was saying, the overall average for movies I've watched in May is a 7.2. So for my average of horror movies, the highest ever was 2019 for me for May with an 88.89%. Then 2020 was an 88.33%. This year is a 76.19%. Last year was a 72.97%. The lowest was 2018 with a 66.67%. As this year is slightly still bringing down that average, which is still sitting at a 77.61% for the month of May for what I am watching. And then, so for my yearly totals, I've watched 28 2022 releases that are horror. I've watched 145 horror movies. Total movies is 206. Average year is 1997. Average rating is a 7.5. Percentage of horror is a 70.39% total. And just to kind of compare a little bit from my yearly totals from everything else, is that the new movies and horror movies still a bit down in total number and everything like that. The best way that I can kind of compare would be if I'm on my pace for totals and everything like that. And the best way that I can do that is there have been 151 days out of the year. And by the end of June, there will be 181. I'm still under my pace for new horror movies so far, but I can still catch up with that, and October will help there. As for horror movies, I'm only down 6 from where I should be if I'm going to watch one a day. And I don't believe that I'm still on pace right now. I've lost a little bit of that, but I do think that I'll be able to catch up there, as I've been saying. As that would be that I should be at 226. So I am still below that, but like I said, I will catch back up there. And then for my average year, actually, this year is bringing it down, as this is my lowest average rating so far, to 1997, as the previous 3 years have been 1999. The year before that, with 2018, was a 2000. Average year is still 1999. Average rating, I'm pretty much on pace, as it's 7.5. I'm at a 7.5 this year. I was as well last year, as well as 2018. The highest was 2019 at a 7.6, 2020 at 7.3. So they all kind of hover right around there. So percentage of horror is, I know I came up as it was in the 60s, the high 60s, but I went back up to 70.39%. My average percentage is 78.73. The lowest ever was 2018 with a 72.07. The year after that, 86.87, which was the highest. And then it was 83.80. And then 80.54. So still, I'm bringing that average down, but I think October will definitely help there. So that's all I really wanted to get you up to speed with here for my monthly and a little bit of my up-to-year date and everything like that. So what let me go ahead and do is get you over to a very brief break before I get into those mini reviews. And I hope you enjoy coming on this journey with me. And for my first mini review here on this week is going to be a movie that I've actually already covered, and that is Extraordinary. This is from 2019. This was directed by Mike Aaron and Edna Logman. Now, this was written by Aaron, and there was also additional writing by Damian Fox and Mauve Higgins. Higgins also stars in this with Barry Ward and Will Forte. This is a comedy fantasy horror film that is a co-production between Ireland and Belgium. It is currently set on a 6.4 on IMDb and a 3.4 on Letterboxd, with the synopsis being, Rose, a mostly sweet and lonely Irish driving instructor, must use her supernatural talents to save the daughter of Martin, also mostly sweet and lonely, from a washed-up rock star who is using their satanic pact to reignite his fame. So, this is a movie that I originally did a featured review back on episode number 23, and this was Centennial Club number 6, where I paired this up with the other less popular version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from 1920. But Jamie and I actually watched this together the first time during the pandemic, as this was being shown streaming via Gateway Film Center, where if you watch something, you had to pay for it, but the proceeds went back to the center. Jamie and I had so much fun the first time around and decided that we wanted to have something a little bit more lighthearted to watch. And what I will say is that this movie held up after the second viewing. Horror comedies are hit or miss for me. I thought this one works. The concept is interesting, I think. The story has some depth to it. The acting helps to bring our characters to life, and I also think that the depth of the characters help there as well. It builds towards what is happening that also feels real. I do think that the pacing is slightly hurt, but it doesn't ruin the movie. The effects were solid across the board, and I thought the soundtrack worked for what was needed. I would say this movie is good overall, and really just a fun one. Not for all ages, but a solid horror comedy for adults. And I will actually say is that my rating has slightly come down on this movie, but that's not to say that I disliked it. It's just, I think I might have went on the higher side that first time around, and I mean, you know, your taste kind of changed and everything. If you want to hear a more in-depth review of this movie, though, I would definitely recommend going back to that older episode, but I still would recommend Extraordinary, especially if you kind of want to see a movie poking fun at The Possession or, like, Exorcist-type movies out there. And for my second review is going to be The Loved Ones. This is from 2009. This was written and directed by Sean Byrne. It stars Xavier or Xavier Samuel and Robin McLevy and John Brumpton. This is a crime horror film that is from Australia. It is currently sitting on a 6.6 on IMDb and a 3.4 on Letterboxd, with the synopsis being, when Brent turns down his classmate Lola's invitation to the prom, she concocts a wildly violent plan for revenge. So this movie that I saw on the shelves while working at Family Video, I didn't see it as a pre-street, but it's one that I rented randomly since the case intrigued me so much. What I saw blew me away with that first viewing. It has been some time since that first time watch, and I've been high on it ever since. I'm now rewatching it for the Summer Challenge series and the podcast Under the Stairs as a potential selection. So because of that, this movie, as I said, blew me away that first time, and I think that it holds up after a second viewing. But I didn't have the same impact. There is a simple story here of a deranged family torturing a boy for turning the daughter down to a dance. There is more to it than that, though. The depths of the characters help here. The acting brings them to life. There is a well-made movie, in my opinion, as I had no issues with the filmmaking aspects. Special credit to the effects and the cinematography, as well as the reoccurring song that we hear in the movie. I would say this is a good movie. If you could handle a bit more of the extreme than normal, give this one a watch. I don't think it goes over too far, but there were a few things that did make me cringe with how realistic some of the stuff looks. Since this could be on the summer series, I'm going to forego giving my rating here and recommend it if everything I said here works for you and you like movies that come out similarly as this one is. Then up next, I have another movie that I'm watching is possible prep for the summer series of Santa Sangre. This was directed by Alejandro Jodorowsky, who also came up with the original story. And then it looks like Claudio Argento helped write the screenplay. I believe Jodorowsky also helped write the screenplay. Adapted to the screen by Roberto Leone. This stars Axel Jodorowsky, Blanca Guerrera, and Guy Stockwell. This is a drama horror thriller that is a co-production between Mexico and Italy. This is currently sitting on a 7.5 on IMDb and a 4.0 on Letterboxd, with our synopsis here being a former circus artist escapes from a mental hospital to rejoin his armless mother, the leader of a strange religious cult, and is forced to enact brutal murders in her name as he becomes her arms. So this is actually an interesting movie that I've actually covered this on the podcast before. This would have been back in the first season, and this would have been on episode 11, which was New Year, New Movies number 2. And this actually would have been the episode that had The Bar from 2017 and Underwater. So as I've already covered, I would definitely recommend to that episode if you want to hear a more in-depth review of what I thought about this movie. But after the second viewing, I can still say that this is a wild one. It does such a great job in establishing this world that seems like ours, but it's just different enough. I love how they built the lead to be unreliable, and he's able to drive the story along with his mother. The lead, you know, being the guy who escapes from the mental hospital, and his mother, who is enraged by seeing her husband having an affair on her. I do think this runs a bit long, but I never got bored. The effects aren't always realistic, but I like what they do with that, and the cinematography was well done in developing this aesthetic. The soundtrack also helps with building tension. Overall, I'd say it's a good movie, and I honestly feel like my rating could go up after another couple more viewings, but I'm not going to give you my rating here at this time because this could be on the summer series, so I will just highly recommend this movie, but I will say this is surreal and art house, so if that's not something that's up your alley, then I would definitely avoid this one. Then my last mini review for this week is going to be The Prey, Legend of Carr Noctis. This is directed between Siri Hensman and Matthew Hensman. Now, Matthew also co-wrote this with Gustavo Sanz de la Peña. This stars Danny Trejo, Nick Chinland, and Adrian Paul. This is an action sci-fi thriller horror movie that is from the United States. It is currently sitting on a 7.8 on IMDb. Now, mind you, there are only 18 ratings at this time. And it's also sitting on, I would say, about a 3-star, maybe even less above. There's not enough ratings on there for an actual average as of yet, but that is where most of the ratings seem to be falling. And the synopsis is, a platoon of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan searching for Taliban become trapped in a cave and are hunted down by a deadly creature. So this is a movie that I was turned on to thanks to Justin Cook, who sent over a screener for review. What caught my attention was that it featured Chinland and Trejo, who were both in the movie together that I love of Con Air. I think both are solid actors in specific roles. Outside of that, I saw this was a horror movie according to Letterboxd and was also an action movie. And I really was kind of interested to see what this one had to offer. So what I'll actually say is that there's quite a bit of characters here that are hard to keep up with. I'm fine with that, as I knew the opening scene that there was going to be a bunch of cannon fodder here, or just characters that have killed off. A lot get decimated in an ambush that happens when a platoon of U.S. soldiers go to a Afghanistan village. So that leaves quite a few still, though, once they get trapped in the cave. From that point on, I like the setting. I'm not claustrophobic, but being in a cave like this trapped scares me. Then you're also adding a creature, and we have a good recipe there. Now, where I want to start delving a bit deeper would be the idea that this is a creature feature facing off against soldiers. Before I do that, this movie is trying to push an interesting commentary as well. We have a special forces team led by Tagger, who is portrayed by Chinland. Now, he hints the soldiers that they're sanctioned to be there by the U.S. government. They probably were trained by them, but they're a rogue now. They're out to steal whatever is in these boxes in the town. This team robbed a terrorist group that was armed by the CIA. This has happened in the past and probably still happening in the real world. So this terrorist group is who ambushed our soldiers, and I like that we are seeing them being overmatched. With how highly trained they are, they go up against a creature who could pick them off. When you have a group that you think is better equipped and unable to overcome, that adds a level of tension for me. So and then the last positive I want to go into would be the creature itself. I did a quick search to see if this was real in lore, but the only thing I came up with was this movie. Even though it isn't something that people fear in real life, I did like what they did there. They went practical with the look of the creature for the most part. It is like a yeti. It has glowing eyes and blood. What is also interesting is this creature can use x-ray vision at times. Thought the cinematography was good with its POV as well as keeping to the shadows. I was thoroughly impressed that they didn't just go CGI here. Another positive is that the attacks this does on characters look to be done practical from what I could tell. They're also strategic in cutting away as well, so it could be CGI. I just think it's a positive to do what they did with the framing. But I do have some negatives here, though. I wasn't overly impressed with the acting. Part of this was how the dialogue was written. It was a bit stiff and trying too hard. Chinland and Grevious play well off each other. They really are the stars here. The soldiers we meet in the movie aren't fleshed out all that well aside from that. I could tell some apart by their looks, like we have Cody, who is being played by Cleveland Berto, who is black. We have Sullivan, who is Matt Musgrove, and he's a annoying soldier that just kind of talks too much. There's also Mingyu Chu, who plays Chen, and he's Asian. And the only one I think they did well in fleshing out to me was Lake, portrayed by Maskia Kalasha. Now, she was strong-willed, smart, and I also found her attractive. I'd say that the acting comes off like you'd get in a slasher movie. That is how this plays out, to be honest, in its setup. And, I mean, the acting isn't bad, it's just lacking. So the last thing I want to go into would be the CGI. It isn't very good. Thankfully, we only get this very early in the movie during the heist, as that's also a section of this movie. Our special forces team steals from these Afghanistan soldiers. And they also have some CGI, though, that are getting our characters trapped in a cave. We have bad computer stuff with bullets and fire bursts from guns. The explosion and blood spray are also not very well done. This took me out of the movie and made me question to go on or not. As I've said, though, this movie gets away from that, and so that works. We also get this odd comic book storyboards to fill in for the credits, both beginning and end, as, like, exposition. I didn't hate this as an interesting way to save money as well as to get us up to speed. So in conclusion here, this is a movie that caught my attention and almost lost it early. I do think that if we get our characters in the cave, it does settle in from there. We have an interesting concept. We have trained soldiers trapped in a cave with a creature. It then becomes a bit of a slasher as they get picked off looking for an exit. The acting is fine. No one stands out with how things are written, makes it a bit stiff. The strongest part of this movie are the practical effects of the creature and the attack scenes with that. I wasn't a fan of the CGI. This movie wasn't as exciting as you expect for an action movie. Being that this falls into the story model of an 80s slasher, which explains why it's a bit faster, slow burn type movie. It's a little bit of an oxymoron, but I think you can get what I'm saying there. So I thought this was okay. I'd put this over average. Some tweaks in this could have been much better, though, especially with some of the actors that we have cast here. So my rating for The Prey, Legend of Carnoctis, is going to be a 6 out of 10. So this movie has a June 3rd release in theaters. So if you're listening to this, it is already out. And then it's also on cable VOD as of June 7th as well if you want to check this one out. So that's all I have for mini reviews for this week. Let me get you over to the trailer of my second featured review.
Just exactly 10 minutes to get out of town. And if you ever show up around here again, I may not be so generous. Oh, no, you don't. What is it?
It's a cave-in, boys!
For my first featured review here on this episode is going to be Haunted Gold. This is from 1932. This was directed by Mac V. Wright, and then there's two uncredited for the animation sequences. I believe this is just in the very beginning, which is Hugh Harmon and Rudolph Ising. This is a screenplay written by Adele Buffington. This stars John Wayne, Duke, and Sheila Terry, while also featuring Harry Woods, Ervil Alderson, Otto Hoffman, Martha Maddox, Blue Washington, Tom Bay, Bob Burns, Edward Burns, Jim Corey, Charles Lemoyne, Ken Maynard, Bud Osborne, John T. Price, Tarzan, and Slim Whitaker. This is a mystery western horror film that is from the United States. It is currently sitting on a 5.4 on IMDb and a 2.6 on Letterboxd, with our synopsis being, John and Janet get a weird letter telling them to go to a ghost town which has an abandoned mine. They are there then to contend with bad guys looking for gold. And there's also a phantom that is guiding events. So this is a movie that I didn't hear of until looking through Letterboxd for horror released in 1932. It was interesting to see that this featured John Wayne, as he's an actor that I knew growing up, but today I've only seen 5 of his movies that he's been in. It is also interesting to see that this was co-starring was Duke, which kind of threw me off at first, but then as I was looking into it, I realized that this is his horse. So this movie is also the only horror movie that John Wayne has done. So before I jump into the movie itself, let me do some notes on some of the key people here, and I'll start with our director of Wright, who has 23 movies. I've only seen this one so far. It looks like he did focus mostly on Westerns, as this is the only one in genre. The writer of the screenplay was a woman, actually, which really kind of surprised me for being this early into cinema, and her name, last name was Buffington. She focused on Westerns as well. Now, she wrote 76 films, and this is the only one that I've seen, and the only one that was horror as well. Then moving to our actors, I'll start with The Legend of John Wayne. I've seen 5 of his 223 movies, as I said. I've seen The Searchers, Stagecoach, The Quiet Man, and True Grit. This is the only horror movie that I've said that he's done. Then shifting over to his Horse of Duke, was in 7 movies with John Wayne. This is the only one that I've seen, and that was also in horror. Finally, I'll look at Terry. She has 37 credits. This is the only one that I've seen, and this is the only one that she was in that was horror. So we start in this town, like the synopsis said. Now we have Joe Ryan, portrayed by Woods, and his crew are playing cards. They're waiting on Ed, who's portrayed by Corey, to return. What I'm gathering is that they're heading up to this place called the Sally Ann Mine looking for gold. This mine produced this precious metal in the past, but has been thought to be picked clean and has dried up. But there is this phantom that is haunting the area. Ryan is convinced that it must be there to kind of watch over the gold as well as the mine, so he believes that there must be more hidden there to have somebody like this hanging around. To complicate things, we have John and Janet both receiving a letter to come there. John's father helped to find the mine with Janet. John was left in the will of his father that he would get his father's share now that he's passed away. Janet's father, though, lost his claim to Joe's father. She isn't sure why she was called there. John takes it upon himself and his bodyguard, who is Clarence, portrayed by Washington, to restore her claim. They meet with Tom Benedict, who is Alderson, and he relays what he knows. It becomes a fight over who owns this mine. Is there gold still to be had there, or was it all taken when this town dried up? John wants to ensure that Janet gets her claim back, but Joe won't give it up without a fight. There is this phantom that is guiding people and interfering with things that is happening and also spying on people. Now, who are all they, and what is their endgame? This makes for an intriguing series of events. So that's where I'm going to leave my recap, as we have already introduced our key players here. So where I want to start is that I enjoyed when we combined horror with the Western genre. We don't get a lot of movies that fall into both, but I tend to be a fan when they do. Due to the era that this came out, it is light in horror to the point where I wasn't entirely sure if I would consider this. I'm only including it here because it was included on Letterboxd, so I figured I would watch it and review because of that. So that out of the way, I want to start with our setting. This is one of the things that works for me. Since this is Western, we are getting a ghost town. I like having the movie here. We are after the gold rush, so there are towns that popped up when this metal was found and then died when it was all removed. There is something about a dead town like this that works for me. We also get bandits that are living there, which makes sense. Being that there is a mine involved, the movie goes into the tunnels. There are also elements of old dark house movies with secret passages in the houses, and tunnels are incorporated with them as well. So since that's been fleshed out, I want to go to the Wild West elements. I've already brought up the ghost town, mine, and we get bandits. There is John and his horse Duke, playing itself. He is out there to do the right thing. He has no issues with Joe and his crew until he learns some of the bad things they've done. Joe's father forced Janet's father Bill, who is portrayed by Prince, out of his claim on the mine. John doesn't like what he hears and wants to fix it. He knows that he can't just force it back and comes up with a couple different plans to fix what is wrong. That fits for what I think of John Wayne's characters in my limited knowledge of him. Now, I do know he would kind of play a more rough and tumble type guy, but at this time, he is still playing like this, do the right thing and set things right when they're not. So that's about the extent of what I want to go over to the story, so I'll move over to the acting. Wayne is fine here. I'm not the biggest fan of him, as I feel like he plays the same character in most everything that he's in. I like him as a hero in this movie, though. Working with him as his horse Duke, it cracked me up that this animal got second billing. Terry was cute, and I like her in this role that she played. Woods is good as our villain. Other than that, Alderson, Hoffman, Maddox, and Washington were all good for what was needed. The other issue I did have was the character that they had the latter play. I do give credit for them to avoid going racist outside of that and for hiring him for the movie. None of the acting blew me away, though, but it worked for what the movie needed. So in the last thing before I do just one bit of trivia would be the filmmaking aspects. I think the cinematography is fine. It doesn't do anything to necessarily stand out. There is speeding up of the footage when someone is riding a horse or when a fight breaks out. There is something you would need to see for the era, and that is just what they would do in a lot of these type of things. Not really sure why. I think it's fine, though. I do give credit for changing to some different types of shots. There aren't a lot in the way of effects, but the movie didn't need it. I did like the settings that we got here in the movie. The ghost town, the tunnels, and the hidden passages in the house tick boxes for me. Other than that, the soundtrack was fine without necessarily standing out outside of that. So then what I wanted to share for the trivia would be that the statuette of the Maltese Falcon, previously used in the original version from 1931, can be seen in the background inside the house several times and very prominently in the scene where our film's heroine, Terry, is playing the organ. I don't think I've ever seen that original one. Maybe I have. I know I've seen the Humphrey Bogart one, and I guess I probably should have done a little bit due diligence there, but since that's all I have to share about that, that's, you know, I just wanted to kind of say that. So, in conclusion, this movie was fine. I do enjoy mixing the elements of the Western with a bit of horror. The story is lacking a bit, but I did like the acting. Using a ghost town with a nearby mine and hidden passage in some of the houses was good. The acting fit for what was needed. The filmmaking aspects worked without doing anything to set it apart, in my opinion. Being that this is the only horror film that John Wayne did, makes it historic for me. I would say this is over average. It's just lacking elements for me to go higher. So my rating for Haunted Gold is going to be a 6 out of 10. Not going to do a spoiler section, as from everything I've said, there's not anything deeper that I want to go into. So what I will go ahead and do is get you over to the trailer of my second featured review. And for my second featured review here in this episode is going to be The Sadness. This goes by the original title of Kubai. This was originally from 2021, but it's getting its wide release here in 2022. This is written and directed by Rob Jabez. This stars Berent Xu, Regina Lei, and Mingru Chen, while also featuring Tzu Chang Wang, Emerson Tsai, Wei Yua Lan, Ralph Chu, Chi Min Chao, and Liu Kang Huang. If I mispronounce any of those names, I do apologize. This is a horror film that is from Taiwan. It is currently sitting on a 6.5 on IMDb and a 3.3 on Letterboxd, with the synopsis being a young couple trying to reunite amid a city ravaged by a plague that turns its victims into deranged, bloodthirsty sadists. So this is a movie that I heard some buzz in the podcast circles that I'm in. It popped up on shows and voices I respect talking highly. It made me excited to check this one out. There is no 2022 releases that were coming to my theater for the week that I watched this, so I decided, you know, that would be this week. So I decided to make this a feature review here, as you could tell. So then before I get into the movie itself, let me do some feature notes, and I'll start with our director. Jabaz has 6 credits. Looking through, I saw he did some animated stuff, and that comes into play with this movie. This is the first one that I've seen, and in horror, he has a short before doing this movie here. As a writer, he has 5 credits. They are the same in genre and that I've seen. Moving to the cast, Zhu has 4 movies that he's been in. This is the first that I've seen and the only one for him that is in horror. His co-star of Lei has 2 credits. Both are in horror. She is in something titled Anti-Kelpie, and it doesn't have a release date as of yet, so that one is still, you know, either in production or has not really been screened anywhere and doesn't have a release date as of yet, as I was saying. So the last one will be Chen. This is her feature film debut. So we start this off with the opening credits, and we're seeing virus cells attacking other cells. This simulation shows what happens when it spreads to other places in the body and getting someone sick. We then meet our 2 leads who are in bed. There is Jim, who's portrayed by Zhu, and Kat, portrayed by Lei. I'm taking it that she has to go to work, and they get in a bit of a tiff when he potentially cancels their plans for the following week. It isn't easy for her to get days off, and she is limited for the time that she has. He does advertising, so he has to take work when it comes, so I can understand both sides of this argument. So I should then set the stage. There is something called the Alvin virus. Jim watches a video of a doctor being interviewed about it. There is a fear that it's going to mutate. It has symptoms that are like rabies, and the interviewer mocks him. This movie is quite poignant with the pandemic in the world of the movie and mirroring what we went through here in our own real world. Jim sees someone on their roof that looks like to be covered in blood. This person disappears, and then he talks to his neighbor of Mr. Lin, portrayed by Chu. He doesn't believe this virus is as bad as they say, and he believes the media is blowing it out of proportion, and he actually believes there's a capitalistic reason behind it that they're trying to, I believe, for either the real estate, or they're just trying to drive stocks down so they can buy them low and then sell them high. I can understand where he's coming from, but I also can see shades of people who thought that the pandemic was a hoax as well. So Jim drives Kat to what I'm guessing is a subway station. She heads off to work, but on their drive, they see some odd things. There are more police cars than normal and people that look to be violently attacked. Jim gets a taste of this firsthand when he goes to a local shop for a coffee. An old woman comes in, vomits in someone's face, and attacks a cook. Jim doesn't have his phone, so he heads home for it. This is just the beginning of the nightmare as he tries to get to Kat so they can escape. She has her own troubles, though, with a businessman portrayed by Wang on the train. So that's going to leave my recap for this movie, as that really does well at introducing some of our important characters. What I want to start is in the world of the movie. There will be people that will have problems here. This movie is set in a world like our own. The virus in this movie is much more deadly than COVID. If you want to have more of escapism when watching something, I would avoid this. I think there's a good commentary here, though. It didn't feel like it was in your face as it could be, but again, there are some people who are going to think that is what this movie is trying to do here as well. I just wanted to preface this before delving deeper. So where I'm going to go next would be this virus and its effects. The title comes into play here. This virus makes those that are infected to leak from their eyes. And I mean, if you kind of look at it in the most base terms, it looks like they're crying, but it's not necessarily tears. It's a little bit more viscous of what is coming out. Since this makes it look like they're crying, they're thought to be sad. This virus takes away your inhibitions, though. As the synopsis said, it makes them into sadists. They want to inflict pain on others. Conversely, they love when they're hurt as well. It also makes people prone to sexual violence. Everyone is conscious of what they're doing. They are just driven by their drive to obtain pleasure. And this makes for some horrific things that are said and did in the world of the movie. So that's where I'm going to take this then. The effects in this are done mostly practical. There was a warning at the beginning about how gory this movie is, and it doesn't mess around there. I like the look of the blood that we get. The gore of the attacks is great. Seeing what these people do to inflict pain is interesting, as we get some different things, and it almost looks like people in a brainstorming session came up with some violent and just wild things to do, and they got as many of them into the movie as they could. And I thought the gore of these attacks is great. Seeing what these people do to inflict pain is interesting. There's a bit of CGI, but not enough to ruin things. This isn't the worst movie that I've seen for blood and guts, but we are quite a few things that made me cringe here. If you are into gore, I think you should definitely see this movie. So with that discussed, I'll get back to the story. This is playing mostly on the experience of its viewers for having lived through a pandemic. That makes me wonder how this will hold up down the line. I won't worry about that here, though. Outside of the virus changing people, we have Jim and Kat who are trying to get across the city to get back to each other. This is a road movie of sorts for him as he tries to avoid the infected. Kat, on the other hand, gets hit on while she's on the subway train by the businessman. He follows her from that point on. We don't need a lot here, and what we get, I think, keeps things flowing. And I mean, this movie also is partially set in a hospital, which is another setting that I do enjoy. And what I like is that we're seeing at the beginning of the outbreak, so very little is known. They do play on this, and I dug what they did there. So in the last bit for the story would be the concept itself. There are going to be debates if this is a zombie movie or not. Now, I listened to a podcast where there's a legit professor on there who has written about zombies. And if you're curious, this podcast is Jay's New Horror Movies. And this is, I believe, Dr. Walking Dead. I believe his name's Kyle Bishop. And if I'm wrong, I do apologize. And if somebody wants to correct me, please do. So his classification for movies like 28 Days Later is that they are zombies but fall into the subcategory of infected. That is what we're getting here. They are infected with this virus. They no longer can control themselves and seek their pleasure. That is where I fall on explaining the monster that we have here. So next should be the acting. I thought that Shu and Lei were good as our leads. They do well in giving enough information about them that I care when bad things are happening around them, and it gets the tension going. So that works. I thought Chen is solid as Molly. I thought that Wang was good as our villain here. His introduction is interesting, and I like the commentary of him being a nice guy and where it goes from there. Other than that, I thought the rest of what we got here was solid. I like how the infected people look and acted. That helped strengthen the movie for me. So the last thing would fall under filmmaking. I thought that the cinematography here was good. We get some interesting shots and set pieces. The hospital and subway are being two of them, and I love both of these settings. The latter is claustrophobic and what they do with it there. It got my anxiety going for sure. I also found some things to be implausible at times. Not enough to ruin things, but it made me question if how people could actually survive that situation. Other than that, I thought the soundtrack was good, and it stood out to me for a few different times in a good way, so I will always give credit when that happens. So before I get to my closing thoughts, I have a bit of trivia here. This was funded with a mixture of cryptocurrency and the revenue from a producer's camgirl business. Kind of a cool thing there, especially with the latter. Cartoon played at the beginning was an animated short from 2015 by the filmmaker's director. There is very little computer animation in The Sadness, with 99% of the special effects being practical, which, love that. This film's premise of a plague that turns people into bloodthirsty sadists seems to have taken inspiration from the comic series known as Crossed, which I am interested to check out. Chiu, who plays the friendly neighbor in The Sadness, is a very recognizable face in Taiwan due to years of being the spokesman for a popular supermarket chain. Interesting. German licensee Caplight had to submit this three times to the FSK before it was granted a not under 18 rating for its theatrical release. A rating for the release of the uncut version on home video was rejected. That's wild. This movie was filmed in 28 shooting days in Taipei and Keelung, Taiwan. Due to the pandemic and government regulations, filming in the subway and hospital was not possible, so these sets were built from scratch in a studio. This was made upon request from a producer after the news of Hollywood shutting down during the pandemic. That is very poignant. There was a scene cut from the script where an infected individual enters an operating room where someone is having their brain operated on, and it was said that the infected defecates inside the open wound, which is wild. It was cut because the producers thought it was too funny, and the director, since it made the gag public domain for anyone to steal it, which also very interesting. And I'm wondering if, because somebody found out about this and put this out there, if somebody can use it or if they have, you know, kind of rights on that. Not really sure how that works. So in conclusion here, I'm glad that I watched this movie. We get a different take on the zombie film with these people being infected by a virus. The social commentary here is good. It is poking fun at the world that we live in and how badly things are handled at times. It also explores some other things while the story itself is simple. I think the acting is good in bringing these characters to life. The best performance for me is Wang as this businessman. The effects we get in this are on point. There is a slight hiccup with CGI, but seeing that that's really the only time you get it, I'm not really going to hold that against anything. But the lack of blood from some of the wounds I did have some slight issues with as well. I would give credit to the soundtrack and the cinematography is solid. I would say it's a good movie, and I plan on revisiting this before I head into my year end just to see where this will fall on my end of year list. So my rating here for The Sadness is going to be 8.5 out of 10. Not going to do a spoiler section, so let me get you over to a very brief break before I close out the show.
Journey with a Cinephile.
I would like to welcome you back. And then just to close everything out here, if you'd like to send me an email with any sort of feedback or anything that you'd like to have read on the show, you can send me that email at journeywithacinephile@gmail.com. If there's anything that you send me you don't want read on the show, just let me know in that email. If you'd like to read any of the reviews from anything on this episode or any of the past episodes, that's horrorreview.webnode.com. If you'd like to become friends with me on Facebook, I'm David Mishkin Garrett Jr. On Twitter, I'm Buckeye from Mish. Letterboxd, I'm David OSU. And over there, I'll be posting all of the reviews of anything that I'm watching that is horror or non-horror alike. If you'd like to follow my Instagram page, that's David OSU87. If you'd like to follow the Journey with a Cinephile Instagram, that's Journey with a Cinephile, all one word. What I will be posting over there is, on both of them, the movie posters of anything that I am reviewing. And if you follow my personal one, every now and then you might see some personal pictures if I ever post any, because I tend to forget while I'm out and about. And just to make it easier on you, I'll have all of those links in the show notes. And then the last thing I'd ask you to do is that whatever podcatching device you're listening to me on, if you could go ahead and hit subscribe so you never miss a new episode, that would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you're able to rate and review just so I can figure out what I'm doing that you like and what I'm doing that you don't like, as well as to get out to more listeners out there as well. And for my next episode is going to be another Trek Through the Twos. And it looks like the two movies that I'm going to be pairing up for the next episode are going to be... I know I'm going to go to the Gateway Film Center to watch Crimes of the Future, the new, I believe, David Cronenberg movie. That one looks really interesting there. And then I'm also going to be pairing that up with Behind the Mask. That's another one from 1932 that I have never seen before. And I'll try to figure out what the double feature is going to be there. Also, I'll be watching more summer series prep that I'll have as mini reviews, as well as I know I have a screener that I am going to watch. I don't think it's necessarily a horror movie, but I still like to kind of throw those out there like that when they are sent over to me, but I'll get into that next episode. Don't think there's anything else I need to get up to speed with here, so what I will say then in closing is that whatever you do today, I hope you're safe and doing it, have a great time out there, and thank you once again so much for listening. This is your tour guide of David Garrett Jr., and I am signing off.
It had been a wonderful evening. And what I needed now to give it the perfect ending.